This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Before I start my program, I just want to say a special hello to my goddaughter, Kanisha. I've been thinking a lot about you, and I hope that you're writing and having lots of fun, and I'm hoping that you'll be on the program again soon, because I miss you and I really want to spend some time with you here on Joy on Paper so we can talk about how you are progressing with your writing projects. And now today, I want to say that I really am thrilled to have this author on today because I was introduced to her by one of my favorite authors, Margaret George, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Brooke Allen. Hi, Brooke.
Hello, Patsy.
Okay, well, I want to thank you for joining me today, and I want to tell you that, you know, I was so intrigued when I heard that you wrote a trilogy. Well, you're in the progress of writing a trilogy, and the first book of your trilogy, which is called Antonius, Son of Rome, just came out, and it's just a thrill to be able to talk to you about it.
Oh, I'm so excited to be able to do so. So, yeah, fire away.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play something here just to get you in the mood, a little bit of, let's have some Charlton Heston here.
He says for Brutus' sake, he finds himself beholding to us all.
Well, but
this may no harm of Brutus here.
This Caesar was a tyrant.
That's certain. We are blessed that Rome is rid of him.
You gentle Roman.
Peace. Let us hear him.
Friends. Romans. Countrymen. Lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. Good is often interred with their bones. So let it be with Caesar. The noble Brutus hath told you Caesar was ambitious. If it were so, it was a grievous fault. And grievously hath Caesar answered it. Here, under leave of Brutus, and the rest. For Brutus is an honorable man.
Aye.
So are they all. All honorable men. Come I to speak in Caesar's funeral.
Okay, well, that sets the scene.
It certainly does.
Well, you know, that, of course, is a scene from Julius Caesar, and that reading is done by Charlton Heston, which I love this reading of his. I think it's one of the best. This is from 1950, from the movie in 1950. And a few years later, it's very funny that Marlon Brando actually played, Mark Antony. And I always prefer this Charlton Heston version, but wow.
I love Charlton Heston too. I actually got to meet him once, so... He's near and dear to my heart.
Well, that's perfect then, because that, you know, people have heard that speech in various forms. Sometimes, you know, it's been used in cartoons even. So it's the kind of thing people say, okay, who is Mark Antony? Who is he? Who was he? And of course, some people have seen the movie, you know, the Elizabeth Taylor movie. And so they know Antony and Cleopatra. But there's a lot of depth to Mark Antony. And so I found your book, Antonius, Son of Rome, so fascinating. As I said, it's going to be a trilogy. This is the first. And this covers the early years when he was young and up to the point where I believe he meets Cleopatra, right?
Pretty much so, yes. Right. He He's very young in this book, yes.
Okay, so it really is a wonderful study in how somebody becomes great. I mean, because he really did. And he comes from an interesting background, and that's where I want you to start. Explain to us this son of Rome. Who was he, and how did he become so important in the history of the world?
Antony was probably one of those people in history who has been kind of swept under the rug as far as his own contributions to ancient Roman history, because he lost. His memory was treated with damnatio memoriae, the damning of one's memory. And, you know, in my opinion, you know, he has his own story to tell. And we've heard from Caesar. We've heard from Cleopatra. We've heard from Cicero. We've heard from all of these other Romans. And, you know, since I was a sophomore in high school, I'd always wanted to write on somehow the first century BC. And I thought this would be an interesting approach because his story has not really been told, you know, from his point of view. So that's where I came from. I just really wanted to share his story. And I thought with the material that I had, it would probably be best to do so in a trilogy so that we could really take our time and explore his character and how it changes over time.
Well, I think it's ideal because now he was born 2,102 years ago, and so much happened in the years that he lived. So many fascinating parts of history that we are even today are relevant because the Romans were out there. They were moving around. They were expanding their world, and they touched so many parts of the world that we today are deeply involved with. I think all of this is relevant for today's readers to say, well, it gives us some background, gives us some understanding of what the Romans did and where they expanded to. And so that's why I thought this story just it unfolds beautifully. Why don't you start with the very beginning and why the death of his father, because that is so important to his entire life, what he wanted to do and why he wanted to pursue something special in his life. He wanted to make himself great because of his father.
Certainly. You know, by the time Antony was born, so much of the world as it was then had been subjugated by the Romans. There were still some holes, you know, Egypt was still free. North Africa had, you know, was just being touched by Marius and Sulla. The story behind Antony's family is somewhat tragic. The Senate had pretty much told his father to go and subdue some pirates in the Mediterranean, and he was not successful. In fact, we don't exactly know the exact details. However, we do know that he bungled the job. Oh, it was a mess. You know, he wound up trying to seek peace with them instead of fighting it out and winning and bringing, you know, glory to Rome and glory to his family, which was a vital part of being a Roman man and being in a position of leadership. And it was pretty much accepted in, you know, in his lifetime, in Antony's lifetime, that his father had been shamed, that whatever happened in my book, he basically tries to create peace with the pirates, and it doesn't work. And we don't know exactly how he died. It could have been by suicide, but it could have been by illness. Somebody could have poisoned him. We don't know. Antony was very young, very impressionable at the time. He was only 11 years old. And you can imagine, you know, having had his father as his hero for years, this was a huge, huge change in his life and in the household. And that's where my story basically takes off, is when he receives the news of his father's shame and degradation, and the family is left with this to deal with.
And his mother, of course, is a fascinating woman. She was absolutely devastated by this discovery that her husband was being ostracized and was being, you know, badly treated, and really they in Rome it was a very serious offense when a person was ostracized. Their family also suffered.
Social order was huge with the Romans, and I'm talking social order not just among the Roman nobles, such as Antony's family and that of Caesar, but I'm talking even among slaves. There was a social order, a pecking order, if you will, that prevailed throughout Roman history. And if you achieved glory in the Senate, you achieved this imperium, this dignitas that you could wear on your toga as a broad stripe. Some slaves who had made it really well in the Roman period wound up being very trusted household companions with their owners, such as some of the slaves in the Antony household that, are featured in my book. So social order was huge, and I think that the Antony family in this particular scenario is dealt a really big blow because they know they're going to be ostracized, exactly as you said.
Now, they were the Antony family was, how were they related to Caesar?
Yeah, this is tough. looking at a lot of different family trees, what I decided to do is just kind of give myself a little leeway here and call him a distant cousin of Caesar. And he was. We know that through his mother's line, he was related to Julius Caesar. He was a cousin. It's rather unclear exactly how. Many of the resources that I looked at suggested he was a first cousin once removed, which I think nowadays a lot of people call a second cousin. But again, I would look at another family tree, and it would be less clear. So I just kind of gave it a cover statement saying he was definitely a distantly related cousin. That being said, we all know, and this is rather stereotypical of me, but we all know how Italian families and even Southern families in the United States embrace, large parts of their family who may be second cousins. And so that's what I did.
We do that up in Michigan. I'm from Northern Michigan, and we have a whole county of cousins. Everybody's a cousin.
Exactly.
My father comes
family
from
family reunions. Can be huge.
Exactly. My father had 12 brothers and sisters, so you can imagine, and most of them stayed up there, for goodness sakes, so the whole area is filled with cousins. But it is interesting that, but Caesar did take an interest in Antony.
He did, and Plutarch states that, especially at the point in my book where Caesar actually says, "Hey, you're going to Greece. You're going to go back to school. You're going to try to learn from some of your mistakes," because Antony was full of weaknesses. He was full of flaws, but he also had a great courage and a great heart, and he was known for his generosity. So, definitely Caesar took an interest in him. In fact, as long as he served under Julius Caesar and his regime, it's hard for me to imagine that Caesar disliked him in any major way, because he did serve him so faithfully and so long. I know that there's a lot of controversy among classicists, even today, whether or not Antony was one of the conspirators who actually killed Caesar. My stance on this is no way. I just can't see that being, possible.
Yeah, I agree. I know there's people always play around with these things, but I think, I've been reading a lot of Roman history, well, since I was in high school, because Latin was my favorite subject. I loved Latin because I had a great teacher. And so it was the one class other than chemistry that I enjoyed going to, every day. It was fun. So I started, reading Roman history from that time on. I always was interested. And I just also feel there's no way that he would conspire against Caesar. I just didn't feel it. And he was interesting as a young man. He was, of course, it was said that he's handsome and charming, and he had charisma even as a young man.
He certainly did. And, you know, I think that that comes across too. You know, Antony's stepfather, his mother remarried after his father's predicament, and she married another man who was very controversial in Roman history, and that was Lentulus Sura. And Lentulus became very much enamored with Catilina, who was a big conspirator in Roman history, you know, a man who was accused of bringing down the Roman Republic. And Cicero became the pater patriae, the father of his country, when he brought down this conspiracy, the Catilina conspiracy. It's a very famous several years in Roman history. And Lentulus was apparently the ringleader of that conspiracy in Rome proper. And, of course, this is covered in my book. And I have Antony being the one giving Lentulus's funeral oration. And we don't know much about Lentulus. He's, again, one of those shadowy characters in Roman history that, you know, we just really don't know much about. But, you know, he may have been part of a conspiracy, but what was he like at home? And that was really fun to play around with is, you know, I made him a very agreeable character, somebody who would be a great stepfather for Antony. And he needed that at that point in his life.
Well, one of the delightful things about your book is that you really, you make it so, you know, what can we say, approachable, because, of course, you write about the Antony's mother and his brothers, and just the everyday life, which I think the way that you've done it is really lovely, because you just bring in, and so we sort of get in the feeling of being in Rome, and whether they're eating you know, lamb stew with squash and leeks, it makes them more approachable and understandable. And I also love the way that you just blend in mythology without, it's not a lesson to us. It's just part of their life, because the Romans were so involved and were always talking about mythology. So it's fascinating how you blended it all in.
They were definitely a very superstitious people. Yeah. They really were. And, you know, when you visit a lot of sites, you know, you can see that even in their homes. You know, they had little shrines to different gods or goddesses, or even demigods and goddesses. And Antony himself was supposedly from the line that originated with Hercules. And so I tried to really bring that into his life, because, you know, Hercules was a great hero in Greek myth. And the Romans, of course, embraced that. And, you know, that would have been something for him to be proud of, even when his father had been so publicly humiliated in his death.
Now, as I said, I love all the details about just the way they lived, and how did you you know, over your research, how did you discover so many interesting things?
Well, a lot of reading. You know, to me, that's the fun thing about writing historical fiction, is learning and just sitting down and just reading books as much as you can. I purchased, I think my biggest book is the Oxford Classical Dictionary. It probably weighs 10 pounds, but it's a wonderful book. It has so much detailed information about, say, where gods were derived from and different deities in both Greek and Roman mythology. You know, I read Mary Beard's amazing book, SPQR, just in the last several years as I was kind of working on my second book. I've read several books by Adrian Goldsworthy. In fact, one was on Roman legions and, you know, how these men lived in a legionary camp and what their daily lives must have been like. Goldsworthy has just such a wonderful way of writing that, you know, can really teach somebody like me who knew nothing about the military, and I had to learn about all this stuff. And you know what? I found myself being kind of a crack field commander by the end of all of this. It was fun.
And you write about it so compellingly, because it was really, I got to the the parts about the battles, and I thought, whoa, this is fascinating, and so many things that I didn't know. And as you know, Anthony grew up and wanted, he was so involved in wanting to be a hero himself, wanting to be a military hero, and working, you know, trying to be with Caesar. I thought you did that beautifully.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, you know, there was a lot of work that went into learning, teaching myself, how would one approach this fight scene? You know, I was very, very happy to have gone to several conferences where you had sessions and men would come in, you know, actually demonstrating fights. And, you know, something so basic as breathing, you know, breathing and breath work in the middle of a fight was huge. And, you know, I can imagine in gladiatorial combat camps, you know, where they were teaching these guys to fight, they would probably be stressing, you've got to breathe, you've got to breathe, otherwise they're going to get you, you know. And, you know, something so basic we don't really think about. You know, I've read quite a bit of, I know R.W. Peek has got a wonderful series out on called Marching with Caesar. And it's kind of been hailed as a really excellent example of what a man in the Roman military would have gone through. And, you know, he talks in great detail about how one holds a sword. And I felt like in my book, I didn't really need to go into that kind of detail, but I did need to go into what Antony is feeling. What's it like? You know, he's a 12-year-old kid at one point in my novel, learning how to fight, learning how to kill. Roman boys were taught that at a very early age, I'm sure. And there was no you know, school that they attended to learn this. And I think that Caesar probably at a very early age may have helped Antony out since, again, his father was not in the picture anymore. So, you know, with these types of things in mind, that's how I kind of created a story around this, since we have so few details around his early life.
Well, I think what you've written is fascinating, and we're going to talk more about it, and I'm going to take a little break. First, I have a book buzz, which is for Margaret George, who is, of course, somebody you know very well now. And I will then, after that, we're going to have a commercial, but you hold on, and we'll be back, and we're going to talk more about your wonderful book, Antonius, Son of Rome. Okay?
Patsy.
Okay, just hold on.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz, The Splendor Before the Dark, a novel of the Emperor Nero by author Margaret George. Need I say more? Here's the buzz. With the beautiful and cunning Poppaea at his side, Nero Augustus commands the Roman Empire, ushering in an unprecedented era of artistic and cultural splendor. Although he has yet to produce an heir, his power is unquestioned. But in the 10th year of his reign, a terrifying prophecy comes to pass, and a fire engulfs Rome, reducing entire swaths of the city to rubble. Rumors of Nero's complicity in the blaze start to sow unrest among the populace and the politicians. Nero will either survive and be the first in his family to escape the web of betrayals, that is, the Roman court, or be ensnared and remembered as the last radiance of the greatest dynasty the world had ever known. Margaret George weaves a web of politics and passion as ancient Rome's most infamous emperor cements his place in history in The Splendor Before the Dark. Margaret George specializes in epic fictional biographies of historical figures, takes pains to make them as factually accurate as possible without compromising the drama. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more on my suggestions and stories you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. And click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. And I am back with my guest, Brooke Allen, and we're talking about her book, Antonius, Son of Rome, the first in a trilogy about Mark Antony. It's so wonderful to have you on the program today, Brooke.
It is a delight to be here, Patsy. Thank you for having me.
Well, as you know, last Tuesday, I had a guest, Robert Castor, Professor Robert Castor, really. He's an absolutely fantastic person. He wrote a book called The Appian Way. He is a brilliant professor at Princeton, and I was so happy that he read a poem for me in Latin. And I wanted to play that again because I had some really wonderful comments from people. It's a short little poem. I'm going to play it right now because I enjoyed listening to it in Latin, and I'm sure you will too.
It's a poem by the Roman poet Catullus as he is about to leave the province of what is now northern Turkey. And he is looking forward to getting home. So here's what he says. Iam ver egilidos refert tepores, iam caeli furor aequinoctialis, iucundis eferi celescet aures. Linquantur frigii catulla campi, nicaeae quager uber aestuosae. Ad claras asiae volemus urbes, iam mens prae trepidans avet vergari, iam laeti studio pedes vigescunt. O dulces comitum valeta coitus, longe quos simul ad domo profectos diversae varie viae reportant. Like a translation?
Oh, no, we don't have time. But, you know, I'm going to have you back, actually. That's so beautiful. You read it so beautifully.
Thank you.
Yeah, we just made history. I think that's the first time anybody on radio has done a Latin poem. And you have a wonderful voice for it. So, you know, maybe we could have you back and we can talk more, okay?
Love that.
Oh, that was fun. I so enjoyed having him on the program.
And I want the translation.
Yes, maybe I'll have him back and I'll have him read the translation too, because he's got a wonderful voice, doesn't he?
He really does. And I bought his book the other night, so I'm looking forward to reading it.
Well, it is wonderful. And as I said, it's called The Appian Way. And it's a wonderful book for, you know, there are so many things happened in that little area between Rome and Brindisi and that have just impacted the world. And so I hope that people will go out and buy it. It's wonderful. And if you're planning a trip this summer, wow, that's something to add to your list of things that you want to do, because it is really a great trip. I did it on my honeymoon, and my husband and I did the entire trip all the way from Rome to Brindisi, where we caught a ferry. And so it's just a wonderful trip.
That does sound wonderful.
No.
I can tell you the Appian Way is featured very predominantly in all three of my books, by the way.
Oh, so. Yes. Yes, because, of course, all of this, so many exciting things happened in this little area of the world. It's amazing. And one of the places along the way, just off of the way, is where Mark Antony went to stay at Caesar's home near Naples.
In Baia, yes. Yes. Now, of course, that's part of the fiction part of my story. But, you know, it's very well known that many of the Roman elite, including Caesar, had beautiful, resplendent villas down in this area. And in the Bay of Naples, it was just a very popular spot to get away during the summer, basically whenever they could, because they love to take vacations just like we do. And anyway, so yes, that takes place in part of my book, especially towards the beginning. And the Antony family is invited to be Caesar's guests down at his villa.
Well, now, one of the interesting things in your book, of course, there's always a make a book interesting as a love story. And so let's talk a little bit about Fabia.
Yes, she was actually a real person. You know, there are, of course, in a historical fiction novel, you're going to have some characters that are just, you know, figments of your imagination that are delightful to create. But Fadia was actually a real person. We don't know much about her other than her father was a freedman. So in my story, she is a slave in Antony's household. And she's very young when the story opens. And, of course, as the story progresses, you know, they get to know one another a little bit better. And by the time their relationship kind of really comes to a head, she does wind up becoming his wife. And she was his very first marriage, according to Cicero. That's where we get the most information about Fadia, which is not much.
Now, as you said, when you have you're writing fiction, and of course it's a novel, you want this romance that you wanted to sort of carry on through the book, and I think you did a great job with making all of the characters come alive, and it's so important. Let's talk a little bit about some of the important characters during that period. And I don't want to forget Spartacus, because Spartacus was alive in that period. I mean, this was an important period of time. Sometimes people, you know, you hear about events, and you're not sure where in history they occurred. And so it's interesting for people just to note that, you know, Antony was 2,102 years ago. That would be 83 BC, and he lived until 30 BC. So all of this happened back then, and one of the important things that happened during that period was Spartacus.
Yeah, the Spartacus revolt was, to me, something that was so unbelievable, you know, during this period when there was a culture of slavery. It was such a deeply embedded culture within the Roman lifestyle that, you know, if one had decided, hey, let's all quit slavery, you know, it would have involved a huge economic upheaval. Slaves were just very valuable members of a household, not just monetarily, but for their contributions in daily life. Fadia and her mother are both slaves in the household. Her mother, Lydia, is more of a body slave, meaning she tended to his mother's needs as far as hairstyling, bathing, makeup, you name it. Lydia was involved in that. Fadia was more of the scullery slave at the beginning, and she kind of goes through a metamorphosis as she becomes Marcus's lover. And eventually she's working as a seamstress and supports herself as a seamstress. Slaves in that period were just amazing people in trying to create some kind of impact for themselves socially. Sometimes slaves could own slaves, which is hard for us to understand, get our heads around that, but it's true. Rome had a very, very intriguing social order, as I mentioned before, and slavery was, though it was the bottom of the social order, a slave could work their way up quite high in someone's household, even managing finances. You know, Caesar is known to have had a slave to manage his finances. Many wealthy Romans did. So these people were incredibly valuable to their masters, their mistresses, their dominas and domini. But at the same time, you know, they had personal lives. And I tried my best to give the slaves in my story real personal lives and depth of character so that the reader would really, really value them as characters as well, as just as much as Antony or his family.
Now, the book, the first book goes up to the age of, how old is Antony at that point?
By the time he meets Cleopatra for the first time, he's 27. Yeah. So it starts when he's 11, and it you know, takes his life through the period when he gets his first command up until the time he's about 27 years old. And, you know, it's interesting. I know in Margaret George's own work, Memoirs of Cleopatra, which I read three times, all 900 pages, fabulous book, you know, she depicts him as meeting Cleopatra. There are some scholars out there who would say that Cleopatra was not even in Egypt at that time, that she had actually gone to Rome with her father and had stayed there. And, you know, who knows? We don't know. But I think that even if Antony had not met her, he probably would have seen her at some point because, you know, I believe very strongly she was probably in Egypt. I can't imagine her wanting to distance herself from Egypt at that point in time, since the kingdom itself was very vulnerable under her sister, and when her father was reinstated to the throne under Antony and Gabinius at the time. You know, I think Cleopatra would have wanted to be there. She was ambitious enough, even at 14, I think, to know what she needed to do and where she needed to be.
Now, by that point, Antony had already had his first command. Tell us about that.
Antony's first command was under a man named Aulus Gabinius, who was the governor, the proconsul of Syria. And he stopped in Athens, apparently, probably to recruit, probably to form a cavalry unit. And while he was there, he met Antony. We don't know exactly how that happened, but I have him running into Antony and seeing him ride. I happen to be a horsewoman myself. And so, you know, it was actually unusual to have many Romans who were really, really accustomed to riding and good at it. You know, Romans based their military mostly on infantry. They used cavalry a lot, but usually the cavalry were auxiliary units, at least at the time period, you know, in the first century B.C. when I'm writing about. Antony was a cavalryman. That's where he made a name for himself. That's where Cleopatra would have first seen him as, you know, probably riding into the city of Alexandria at the head of the army. And, you know, for him to be a cavalryman, you know, spoke volumes about his ability on a horse. And I really tried to create that part of his character, that he was the unusual Roman who loved horses, who loved to ride. I thought that was an important thing to bring across. He was unusual. He didn't fit the usual mold as a Roman. And the further I get along in his story, of course, you know, his character will deepen and change. And definitely, he did not fit the usual mold of what it was to be Roman. And he embraced being a Roman, but, you know, he never was quite a fit into that mold. He hated hypocrisy.
Oh, okay. Well, but when he was younger, before he got his command, he had some rough years there where he was had a wild youth.
He certainly did. Many people would say it was dissipated. And yes, he did. He may have had a homosexual affair with Curio, who would have been a very important politician later, along with Clodius, Publius Clodius. And they apparently had a bit of a club going on in Rome, Antony, Curio, and Clodius. And it was a brothel. I mean, let's not paint it as anything else. I'm sure that's what it was. And there were these three teenage boys, or, you know, young men in their early 20s, who wanted to have a party almost every night. And there was gambling. There, you know, there were women. There, you know, it was crazy, I'm sure. And I'm sure it was very, very expensive as well. So, you encounter that in my story as well. The not-so-nice side of Antony was definitely his preference for kind of a wild lifestyle.
So what happened? When did he sort of make the change and become really focused on his future?
That's interesting that you ask it in that way, because I'll be honest with you, I don't know that Antony ever became thoroughly focused. But I think there were times when he had more clarity than other times, and that was definitely the ultimatum Caesar gives him, sending him to Greece and saying, hey, you've got to get it together here, buddy. You've got to start studying. You've got to make something of your life other than a nuisance. And I think I use those exact words. Maybe not buddy, but nuisance. And he does. You know, he goes. He really tries. He puts forth effort in learning and education, and that's where Gabinius finds him, latches on to him, and says, okay, you're going to be cavalry commander. Let's see what you can do. And that was his first opportunity to travel, to go into the East, which he did. And, you know, he accompanied Gabinius on many different missions. We don't know if Gabinius had, you know, how much of a hand Gabinius had into it. We get most of this information from Josephus, who, you know, kind of tells a little bit about Judea and the East during this period. And it's so good that this has remained, because otherwise we would have not known anything about Antony's life during this time. So Josephus's account to me is just worth its weight in gold there. And Antony helped quell a big uprising in what is now Judea and Nabataea, in the desert regions there. And eventually he becomes embroiled in bringing Ptolemy Auletes, the king of Egypt, back to his throne. So.
Wow. It's an exciting book. As I said, between the very exciting parts where you have the military information, which I love that. I'm always one of the type of people who likes to read military books in general, and so it's exciting. But also to have this as a novel to bring Antony to life, I can see him on a horse as the romantic figure that he has come down through history. And I thought that was a wonderful depiction of him. Now, you have devoted a lot of time to this book. You've been sort of just overcome with this need to know more about Antony. And I think it's a fascinating. How did this happen? What about him took over your life?
Well, believe it or not, I've been working on this project for 14 years. I took a hiatus when I was doing some caregiving for my parents, and we moved them from Florida to Virginia, where we live. But all told, I have done a lot of traveling so that I could experience more of the general locales that Antony visited. I've been to Italy quite a few times, going back this summer, actually, to Greece, and I've even been to Egypt, and I spent pretty much a week in Alexandria. Had a fabulous guide. She had a real interest in Antony herself, so it was great being with somebody who, you know, shared that same interest and excitement about the project with me. We went all over Alexandria. In the times that I've had the privilege of walking, you know, the Via Sacra in Rome and through the Roman Forum, oh, it's been so much fun. One day I started on the Palatine Hill, and in my sandals, I just jogged all the way down to the Curia building, you know, wondering how long would it take for somebody to take, you know, just run down there through crowds of people. And to be honest, it's about as crowded today as it would have been back in that time, you know, during the tourist season. So a couple years ago, I had the privilege of visiting Ephesus, and Antony and Cleopatra visited Ephesus together. You know, these places just add so much understanding to me of, you know, what kind of plants grow there. You know, in world building, it's so important to be accurate as possible. You know, were there pomegranate trees growing in Rome during the first century BC? What kind of fruits did they eat? They didn't have oranges. They had citrons, you know. So, you know, those types of details in the world building process and learning what it must have been like in those places, to me, travel is so valuable.
And no, they didn't have tomatoes, but they did have wonderful flatbread that they dipped in olive oil, right?
They did. Oh, gosh, and I still love to do that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you still love to do that. And it's,
yeah.
So when you are traveling in Italy, it's fun. It is fun to know these type of things. It's fun to – that's why I love to encourage people to read, and because, one – if you are not traveling yet, you want to travel after you read the books, because anybody who you know reads your book here will say, "Whoa, I'd like to see those places. I'd like to go to those places." And I think that's a wonderful thing about being an author, that you can open people's eyes to history and to places that they themselves will want to visit.
Oh, absolutely. I love to travel myself, but you know, there's nothing like picking up a book and traveling in one's imagination. And, you know, in our day and age, unfortunately, I think so many children growing up, you know, aren't given the opportunity to use their imagination enough in standardized testing and the computer games that we have. You know, put those aside, pick up a book, read, use your imagination. It's the most powerful thing you own, you know?
Well, I was telling David Baldacci the other day, I said, you know, he started writing because his mother gave him a blank notebook and said, well, she was actually trying to keep him busy. She said, do something with it. And so he started writing, and look at him today, you know. So,
yeah.
And it would not have happened if she had handed him some kind of electronic device, and he would be playing the same game over and over. So it's so important that children be encouraged to read and to write and to, you know, it's funny, because I love Latin, and so I do encourage people, you know, sometimes people don't realize how much children can absorb. I lived in England for many years, and the children there in my little village, because they went to a public school, which in England is a private school, they spoke Latin, and they would go around the village speaking Latin. And if those little kids could do it, American kids could do it, because I know teenagers here who are you know, learning Klingon. If you can learn Klingon, for goodness sakes, you can learn Latin. It's easier.
You know, Latin, it's probably easier than Klingon,
oh, yeah,
right?
I tried to learn Klingon, and Latin is much easier, which reminds me, I have a song here, a little bit of a song in Latin that I'm going to play, so you can just see that Latin is fun. Okay, you see, you can sing over the rainbow in Latin, and you can have lots of fun.
Well, you're talking to a music major, so
you see,
so yeah, Latin's one of the funnest languages to sing in, for sure.
It is.
Got those open vowels, yeah.
It is. It's wonderful, and I just want to encourage people to learn something. My goodness, and everybody who is, you know, read your book will learn a lot, because it's you are able to write so beautifully and smoothly, but there's so much stuff in there. There's so much. I'm so thrilled. Because I love mythology, and you have mythology. I love to know what people were doing and how they were living, and you have that. You have about the food, about the houses. All of that is so beautifully done in your book, and I really want to encourage everyone. It will be just a wonderful opportunity for you to sort of expand your mind and just have fun reading a wonderful book. It's called Antonius, Son of Rome. And Brooke, what is your website?
My website is BrookeAllenAuthor, all lowercase, .com.
Okay, and it is a beautiful website.
Well, I tell you, we worked hard on it. So.
And the cover of the book is one of the finest covers I've seen. It is really, really beautiful. It's just a pleasure to look at the cover, and your whole website is based on that theme. And I really want to encourage people to go there. You also have a lovely blog stories on there and photos of yourself. It's really an interesting webpage.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm very happy with it. And I do invite people to come on and subscribe if they'd like to so that they can get blogs and updates. And it's just such a privilege to have spoken with you today. I just thank you so much.
Well, I am just so happy that, Margaret, George introduced us to each other and that I've had this opportunity to start with book one, because I'm looking forward already to book two, which will come out sometime toward the end of the year?
I'm hoping, yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's the goal.
Okay, that's the goal. Well, I think you've done a wonderful job. And everybody, the book is available. Go over to Amazon, get it, and then do a nice review, everybody, because I always remind my listeners that doing a review for an author is just a lovely little gift, thank you gift to an author who's really put a lot of herself or, an energy into writing a wonderful book. And so do that for Brooke. And Brooke, again, thank you so much for joining me on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much for having me, Patty.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, I got a lot of things in here. A Latin poem, a song in Latin. And as I said, it's funny. I'm not sure if my goddaughter, Kanisha, who is into a lot of that, if she knows Klingon, but she probably does. She's so smart. And everybody out there, really think about learning something new. Latin is a wonderful thing. It's funny how you can really learn. If you study Latin, you read better. I'm telling you, that's one of the reasons I think I've read over 10,000 books, because I studied Latin when I was young. Anyway, oh my goodness, the time just goes so quickly. I want to just remind everyone, one of the joys of life is to write. My goodness, that's just to write. And of course, to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really lucky, to hear those words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a movie or nowadays streaming video. My goodness, this book would be a great, great streaming video. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed. Big Ed, thank you so much for everything. He's saluting me. Okay, I'm saluting him. And everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And get Brooke Allen's book, Antonius, Son of Rome. It's a great read. Bye-bye now.